The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is sponsored by James Oliver Coffee Company at jamesolivercoffee.com. James Oliver is a second-generation family-owned and Detroit-based coffee roaster, offering 19 different blends of freshly roasted coffee. The company pioneered link-temperature roasting, and they source the best beans from around the world to create an outstanding coffee experience, no matter which beans you choose. To start, try the Alma Mater blend. James Oliver Coffee gives $5 for each bag of its alma mater blend to the Detroit Public Schools Foundation. And don't forget, use the promo code CFSHOW, that's CFSHOW, to get 15% off your first order. James Oliver Coffee, available at select grocery stores in Metro Detroit and, of course, at jamesolivercoffee.com. Remember, use the promo code CFSHOW to get 15% off your first order. That's jamesolivercoffee.com. Hey, good day, everyone. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Very glad to have you with me on this Thursday. And it's been a while since we caught up on what's happening with the automotive industry because obviously this politics, it's an election year. There's all sorts of nuttiness going on, but it is not limited to the political arena. We are seeing some massive changes and some seismic shifts within the automotive industry in the wake, of course, of COVID and everything else, production things that are going on there, but also in terms of new technology, new partnerships, everything else. And one of the people that I count on to keep me informed about what's happening in the automotive industry is my friend Paul Eisenstein. He's the publisher of TheDetroitBureau.com. He also is a contributor to CNBC. He is a frequent guest on the program, and he joins us today. Welcome back, Paul.
Good to be with you, Craig.
Yeah, and like I said, seismic shifts that we are seeing. I mean, you know, if you would have told me 2 years ago that we're going to see a rejuvenation of the Hummer brand from General Motors and it was going to be an all-electric vehicle topping $100,000, I would have said you were nuts, but here we are. This is just another signal that EVs, regardless of what the public believes about them right now, are exactly where the automakers are going.
Yeah, very definitely. And I think the public sentiment in general is shifting. I would say, you know, I could point to my wife who would like to get an EV and is probably just waiting a couple years till a broader array of products comes to market and fills in a lot of the niches that we haven't had before. For anybody who's not been keeping up, you know, the electric vehicle a decade ago was a small, odd looking product like the Nissan Leaf, or it was a conversion of an existing gas-powered vehicle like the Ford Fusion, or a Ford Focus, and so those vehicles didn't quite hit the mainstream. They couldn't, and they never will, among other things, having basically, you know, if they were lucky, 100 miles range. What's happening now is manufacturers are dealing with all the stumbling blocks, the pitfalls, if you will, that prevented broader EV adoption. So the Hummer, which by the way, will not emerge as a Hummer brand. It's going to be under the GMC brand.
Sure, sure.
But it will be offered in two large models, both a pickup, the first product, and then there'll be a Hummer SUV as well. And in fact, by my count, there may be as many as 9 long-range all-electric pickups in the market before 2025. Chevrolet is going to get one. Ford is doing an F-150. I expect there'll be a Ram or Jeep. We have Rivian. We have Bollinger, both of those based here in Detroit. Lordstown Motors, which took over the old GM plant, and on and on and on.
And of course, Tesla. Tesla,
obviously. Tesla, of course, yes, shouldn't miss that, but I was going to get to them later. Tesla, since you bring them up, you know, they're filling a lot of niches. GM, of course, has its first long range, the Bolt. It'll have a stretch version called the EUV. We have the Mach-E coming, the Mustang Mach-E from Ford, the ID4, and on and on and on. So we're going to go from a couple of quirky vehicles with short range to scores. We're talking scores of all electric vehicles, almost all of them long range, many of them pushing well above 300, and even in the case of the Lucid Air, over 500 miles of range within the next couple of years. Now, the other pitfalls, not only is range coming down, but so is the, going up, but range is being matched by a decline in the price of batteries. GM hopes to almost cut in half the cost of its batteries. So does Tesla. So that means that we're going to start seeing cost parity within the next few years.
Well, and again, the lack of a need for any sort of tax incentives for people to purchase these vehicles to make them competitive price-wise, which I think would be a huge victory for the companies and in terms of getting the public mind wrapped around the idea of adoption of this new technology. Now, I do want to ask you a question about why we're seeing this push and these huge numbers, because all the big announcements in the last week, basically, with the exception of, you know, Porsche and a couple others, has been around EVs. Cadillac, we mentioned Hummer, of course, and several other products that are coming online. Toyota's making an announcement today. I'm not sure what that's going to include, but we'll find out about that on your site a little bit later. But what is driving it? Is it the fact that you've got states like California and New Jersey now saying, well, hey, look, we're going to ban gasoline powered engines from being sold in our states by 2035? Or is it a recognition that, again, costs are changing and the infrastructure that they're going to need is going to be in place by then?
Yeah. And by the way, the infrastructure, before I fully answer your question,
the power companies are getting involved now.
Yeah, and you have lots of companies like EVgo, Electrify America, ChargePoint, and others that have seen a market and are investing billions, and it'll start going into the tens of billions of dollars. You know, some parts of the country, California and the East Coast, and believe it or not, Texas, which is a surprisingly big state, not just on oil, but on alternate energy, they are starting to get massive infrastructures where you can charge up publicly. Now, the good part is most people are expected to continue charging at home. I just had a charger put in, even though I don't have an EV yet. I do test driving.
You know what you're going to be testing in the next few years, though. I mean,
a lot of it. Exactly. And the reality is that if you are an EV owner, you'll most likely have a full equivalent of a full tank of gas every single morning, unlike with a gas car where you may be at the end of the week going, oh God, I've got to get in extra early in the middle of the blizzard or the polar vortex to gas up. Well, no, you had it filled up already overnight at home, which is a great advantage. And you may even get the discount rate at home that many utilities offer. But the public charging network is going to be necessary for longer trips going up to your cottage in Traverse City or the UP. And that's going to be one of the breaking or the tipping points for a lot of people in middle America getting that infrastructure. Okay, so as I've outlined, Craig, we have more product, prices coming down, range going up, and more chargers going in the public sector. So that is starting to get a lot of people, like my wife, to reconsider whether or not to get an electric vehicle. I believe you're going to start seeing an acceleration over the next 2 to 3 years. You're seeing that in some other parts of the world. And there's another factor that is driving the auto industry to go electric, and that is the rest of the world. Norway is now up to something like 70% electric. China has very strict mandates pushing electric, whether it be plug-in hybrid or all electric. Let's see, Britain is supposed to, by the end of the year, decide whether to move up by a full decade a ban on selling electric vehicles, perhaps to 2030. Germany.
Gasoline-powered vehicles, yeah.
Gasoline-powered vehicles, right, and diesel. Germany may ban it, France, and you have major cities around the world, Amsterdam, Berlin, Hamburg, Paris, London, that are thinking about or already have put in place bans that you will not be able to drive into the center of the city if your vehicle operates on anything but electric or hydrogen. So there are all sorts of reasons. The U.S. is behind, but catching up. And would you like to hear the other thing that's going to be the big change?
Sure.
Commercial vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing. In fact, I have a whole bunch of stories I'm going to be writing, including for Detroit Business Magazine, about that side of the business. People don't realize it, but over the next few years, you're going to see a massive transformation. When you have a vehicle pull up with your Amazon or whatever product in the next few years, you'll increasingly notice that it's silent. The delivery van is silent. California's put in strict standards. Other states are. And a lot of the companies are doing it on their own because guess what? Even though battery vehicles are more expensive to buy, because of the low cost of maintenance and energy, it is cheaper to run an Amazon delivery van on electricity than on gasoline or diesel. So these companies by the hundreds of thousands are buying or planning to buy electric. Your garbage trucks will be electric within the next few years.
Well, Paul, what's interesting to me too is, and you mentioned Amazon, they have made it an important point of their business to point out that they are converting their fleet to all electric as we speak, that they are going to be zero emissions going forward, and they hope to do that within the next few years. Companies are obviously seeing the PR value of announcing that they're doing this. And how important is that going to be in convincing the rest of us that this is where we need to be?
Well, it'll be important for a couple of reasons. Number one, people will see electric vehicles all the time. Number two, it will have an environmental impact, and that'll reach people that do care about the environment. But the third thing, and this is what I think is most important about all these truck companies or delivery companies that are going over to electric, is they'll get the message out, number one, that it's reliable, and number two, that it's more cost effective. Amazon, yes, they have a zero emissions goal, but when it comes down to bottom line, it is the bottom line that is convincing them to go to electric. The cost for a fleet delivery service to run electric is now already, even with battery prices not down enough, is still lower for an electric vehicle than it is for a gas or diesel vehicle. The cost of operation is just is the key for people that count on vehicles for business. But for you and I going forward, that's going to become an important part too. And one of the nice things is Consumer Reports just did a study where they found that for the average buyer putting on 12,000 to 15,000 miles a year, the cost of running a battery car as opposed to a comparable gas vehicle is, in terms of the per mile operating cost, which also includes maintenance and repairs, half as much.
Yeah, that's just stunning. I want to go back a few years when we were talking about sort of the revolution that was beginning to take place when it comes to alternative fuel vehicles, also autonomous vehicles. There was a big concern that companies like Ford and GM might get left behind by the Teslas and the Apples of the world that were trying to develop their own autonomous technology. But what we're seeing is a lot of these smaller companies with good ideas are looking to partner with the major manufacturers. They're starting to recognize that actually building a vehicle in at any sort of scale is incredibly difficult. Tesla may be one of the few companies that could do it in some sort of comparative way to the big automakers, Toyotas, Volkswagens, Fords, GMs. But a lot of smaller companies are looking to partner now. And it seems that the auto companies have done a good job of positioning themselves as sort of, hey, we can help your vision come to reality here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you definitely see the big companies trying to figure out what their place in the future will be. And nobody is really clear. But nonetheless, it is clear to Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, that they have to go all electric. Ford is finding its own path. Some of the Europeans, Mercedes and VW in particular, also expect to go all electric. Ironically, many of the Japanese that were quick to go hybrid are slow to go all electric, but I think they'll be changing directions very quickly. Whatever the case, what we have seen over the last 40 years, where the industry is no longer dominated by a handful of manufacturers in the U.S., by the big three. I think you're going to see that shift accelerate going forward. Tesla's already expecting to produce about 500,000 vehicles this year. Now, that'll mm-hmm. be international, but that's still a sizable number for a newcomer. And we have a lot of others that have a chance to get into the business. But in every way, the business is going to change. And there's going to be what I call a strange bedfellows moment, where in many cases, erstwhile rivals are going to team up. So for example, General Motors is teaming up with Honda. Two of the Honda all-electric or BEVs that they're coming out with in a couple of years will be based on the new GM electric vehicle platform and batteries. GM is also teaming up with a newcomer, Nikola, which is worth a few moments before we get off the air.
Sure.
But this is very interesting because you have a lot of startups that want to get into the business. Nikola, Lucid, Faraday Future and the like. And what a lot of these startups have realized is that setting up their own assembly plant is a costly nightmare. It can cost you billions of dollars. It can cost you substantially more to set up a factory than it does to design and engineer your car. Tesla was nearly destroyed by problems with its manufacturing plant. Remember what happened when they launched the Model 3?
Sure.
It was a year of nightmares.
Well, and that was an existing plant that they took over. That was the old NUMMI plant, which was a weird partnership between Toyota and GM from back in the 80s and 90s.
Right, and they got it for a bargain.
Yeah.
A new plant could cost as much as $2 billion for some of these electrification efforts. So it's a lot of money, and it's very difficult. So what you're seeing is these emerging companies, these startups, in many cases, not all, but in many cases are saying, what if I don't build it myself? What if I team up? And they have options. Nikola, this Phoenix-based company that wants to build full-size hydrogen electric pickups and hydrogen-powered semi-trucks, is working with GM if their deal doesn't fall apart, which again is another story. Mm-hmm. And this past week, we saw news that Fisker, the Danish designer who was one of the early entries, went bankrupt, launched a new company. Well, he is going to let Magnus Steyr produce his first EV, the Ocean SUV, at a plant in Austria. And I had a chance today to talk with the head of that operation, and he told me they're working with several other startups. And I think that's what's going to happen. You're going to see a lot of potential EV companies say, we're not going to manufacture the vehicles. We're going to design them, and then we're going to turn to a contract company to build it for us.
Well, and that to me, I think, is a significant change, obviously. I mean, companies for decades and decades have wanted to control every aspect of the process. I mean, you go back to the founding of Ford Motor Company. You know, Henry Ford wanted every single part of that to be in his control. Now you've got companies that are going to be able to just do contract work, similar to what we see in every other industry. You have some builder in China that decides that they're going to build this kind of thing and actually handles the manufacturing part of it. This is a massive shift. And is this a threat in any way to the stature of the American companies and even the Japanese and Korean manufacturers?
Yeah, in many ways it will be, because they're going to have to rethink what it is that they are selling. As you mentioned, if you go back and look at the Rouge plant, basically everything that rolled off the assembly line was in one form or another produced at that plant. Raw glass, raw sand, which became glass, raw ore that became steel and so on. Whereas now, increasingly, you're turning outside for motors, for batteries and so on. Some plans call for you to do a lot of it internally. So GM has formed a joint venture with a Korean company, LG Chem. They're going to build their batteries at a new plant near Lordstown, Ohio. GM is building a lot of the motors. Excuse me. They will operate the assembly line and so on. But they will use more parts from outside than before. And the question is, what is really going to define the electric vehicle? What is it that you will be buying? What we've learned is, unlike those first gen EVs, battery cars are, I'd use the four letter word, but phenomenally fast. How's that?
Yeah.
I mean, these cars can do 0 to 60. The Hummer will do it in its edition one model in 3 seconds. We are starting to see Teslas that are approaching the 2.0 second mark. And there'll be some specialty vehicles that are looking at getting under 2 seconds, 0 to 60.
Is that necessary?
Yeah.
From a speed perspective, I suppose so. But
that's
the shortest answer
you'll ever get from me, by the way.
I mean, I understand that. And I think, you know, the drag strip is going to look a lot different in the coming years than it has for a long time.
The Lucid Air is turning quarter miles in as low as 9.2 seconds. And that's not the fastest version. They have a faster one coming. That is faster than the Ford Shelby GT500 down a quarter mile. I've launched in some of these, and it is a launch. And you literally, you see your vision almost do what happens on a aircraft carrier as it sort of pulls in. It is an amazing feeling to launch an electric vehicle. There's no, you know, revving up the engine. Torque comes on instantaneously. And so when you go forward, what is it you are going to sell? Well, one thing will be exterior and interior design, but then there'll be the user experience. And a lot of that is going to be based around what you do on your infotainment screen, how many features it has, how easy it is to operate, and so on. Whether it will interface with your Alexa device or your Google Home or all that. Now add autonomous technology. So you may not even be driving yourself a lot of the time. What is it you are buying? And this is one of the things manufacturers have to figure out going forward. What is that electric vehicle that they're selling? What are they selling? It's a transportation device. It'll likely be very quick. But what is it that makes a difference in the future between a Lucid, a Tesla, a Faraday Future, or a GM, Ford, Honda, VW, and so on?
It's going to be amazing to watch. I mean, these are exciting times, actually, if you think about it. I mean, we are on the brink of a revolution when it comes to transportation here, and we're close. We're really close. And I'll tell you what, one of the things that made me feel that this is very serious, and everybody's taking this incredibly seriously, is that when I see Consumers Energy and DTE buying into companies that are going to build the electric infrastructure so you can refill your vehicle in a short amount of time while you grab some lunch somewhere and continue on your path down to, you know, from New York to California, that's a big deal. That means that they're taking it seriously. And I know that, you know, companies like Shell and BP, they're all looking to convert as well and be a part of this. So soon.
Yeah, well, Craig, it's fascinating because it will change so many other aspects of the life. When you drive autonomously, it'll even change what you do when you're getting from point A to point B, where the vehicle is doing it for you. Do you stop along the way? You know, do you have impulse purchases when you see a store or you see a restaurant you want to stop at, or do you just go where the vehicle is taking you? The infrastructure issue is. Yes, it's about electric charging stations, but there's much more to that. First of all, where do we get the electricity?
Yeah.
Now, the reality is, as I said, the expectation is that 80% of charging will continue to be done at home or during the day at office. The stuff done at home is by and large done when utilities have a surplus of energy. So even if they sell it at a fraction of their normal day rate, they're still making money for energy that they were essentially wasting in the past. But there will still need to be more. And, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to build coal or even natural gas-fired plants to charge up an electric vehicle, because it sort of defeats the purpose to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see, and you are seeing, a very heavy push by the same people that back EVs to build, you know, renewable power plants. So we're going to see a lot more solar, wind, wave, geothermal, just about everything. And then there'll be the issue of what do you do with these endless number of batteries that are going to start coming off. Boston Consulting Group recently did a study about that, and you're going to see several things happen. One, they have to improve the process of recycling, which is not very easy right now for these batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully will get easier. And then you're going to see what's called second life. The new batteries are so good that they are expected to outlive most of the cars that they'll be used in. At least have, say, 70% of their original capacity once the vehicle is scrapped. So what do you do with the battery? Do you just recycle it, or do you find what's called second life? So, you know, we live in Detroit. How many times have you lost power in the last year?
Once.
You're good.
Yeah.
I've had as many as 11 outages in a single year here that lasted for more than an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in an older neighborhood where there's a lot of wires, a lot of trees. Well, you know, you can do several things. One, you can help avoid brownouts by having more standalone stationary power supplies using old automotive batteries that, you know, that store power off hours. And then if there's a surplus needed in the summer on a very hot day, the batteries kick in to support the factory or the generating plant, I should say. And also when there's a power outage, since you may have a standalone stationary supply down the end of your block, you may not be out of power unless the snowfall, the ice storm, cuts the wires on your block. So it can prevent a lot of the brownouts and a lot of the blackouts. Plus, it will help with wind power by storing excess power in overnight usage so that there is continued energy during the day. Solar power, you can build bigger arrays that continue to provide power overnight since it'll be stored in second life car batteries.
It's pretty fascinating stuff. The possibilities are, you know, I'm glad there are smarter people than I am that are thinking about this kind of stuff. That matters to me because, you know, I would love to buy an electric vehicle one of these days. Hey, obviously we got to get through COVID before we drive anywhere, but that's another story. Paul Eisenstein, I got to let you go. I know you've got another press conference coming up that you've got to monitor here in just a minute, but I appreciate your time today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Great to be with you, Craig.
Paul Eisenstein, of course, is the publisher of TheDetroitBureau.com, a frequent guest on the program. You can also find his work at CNBC, and as he mentioned, look for him in D-Business as well. We always appreciate having him here. Hey, quick reminder, coming up tomorrow, it's the week that was on Deadline Detroit. Of course, we've got the big debate tonight, the final debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. We will likely be spending a little bit of time dissecting what happens there. It's going to be interesting. And I'll be online tonight watching this. I'll start a thread on my Facebook page. If you want to join me, tell me what you're thinking about what you're witnessing, or if you're not watching it, I'll put it up there. And I always appreciate your input there from any side that you're coming from. It's okay. Just as long as we're nice to each other, life will be just fine. But tomorrow's guest on the program, pretty excited about this. I've got a good crew. Portia Roberson, CEO of Focus Hope, is going to join me. She's been on a number of times, always done a great job. We're also going to have Stephen Henderson of WDET, Detroit Today, a good friend there. He will be joining us, as will WDIV Channel 4 anchor Devin Scillian. So three guests on tomorrow's program to break down what is likely to be a lively debate tonight. And there's lots of other stuff to talk about as well, including some weirdness involving Rudy Giuliani and some other stuff that's going on. So don't miss tomorrow's show. We're going to have a lot of fun. Again, it's the week that was on Deadline Detroit. Of course, it's part of my show as well. So it is the Craig Folly Show, but I just call it something special on Fridays. So don't forget, you can watch it live at 11:30 tomorrow on Facebook Live or on YouTube. If you go to Deadline Detroit's YouTube page, you can watch it there live as well. But we will post the video then at deadlinedetroit.com, and I will make it available as a podcast tomorrow afternoon too. So any way you want to get it, hey, that's fine. Just let me know. And if you like it, tell your friends about it. Subscribe to the podcast, rate it, all that good stuff. It all helps a lot. And, you know, I do check in on these things and see how we're doing, and the numbers are going where I want them to go. It's not the most popular show in the world. It never will be. We're a little too local for that, but I have a very loyal group, and I appreciate that very much. Also, I appreciate my sponsor, James Oliver Coffee, jamesolivercoffee.com, a Detroit-based coffee roaster. They're doing some cool stuff here as they get their business going, and they make great stuff. It's been around for quite a while. They relocated to Detroit a few years back from the East Coast, and they're making their home here, and they make good product. I just got some of their country French the other day, a couple of pounds of it delivered, as a matter of fact. Just bought it online. Use the promo code CFSHOW, and you'll get 15% off your first order from James Oliver Coffee. And check them out. They are really, really good, and some really nice people involved in that operation as well. So thank them. Thanks to you for listening. I always appreciate it. And tomorrow, again, the week that was, it's going to be a big one. Less than 2 weeks to go till this election, folks. It's going to going to be fireworks tonight, I have a feeling. Have a great day. We'll talk soon. The Craig Folly Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.